Hey, this is Kurt Isles. I want to welcome you to the Creek Bank Stories YouTube channel. Now, you may be listening on a blog, podcast, or YouTube. You can find connections to all of these at www.creekbank.net. It's creekbank.net. Hope you'll pay us a visit there. Now, as I start today's story, I want to tell you, it's mid-July in Louisiana. I'm outside on the porch. Now, it is a dog trot porch that's built to have a breeze blowing. There's no breeze blowing today. If you look closely, I'm sweating. But you know what? I don't want to be inside to tell this story. I think my stories are best told on the outside at the old house at the end of Clayton Isles Road on the edge of Crooked Bayou Swamp. Today, I want to share a story from my first book, Stories from the Creek Bank. And it's a story that starts off with a poem. And it's about probably the most special place in my life, the Dry Creek Camp Tabernacle. Let me read it to you, then I'll tell you more about the camp and that special building. Tabernacle Prayer. Dear Lord, as I sit in the back of this old building called the Tabernacle at Dry Creek, I'm reminded of all the great things you've done in this building. Up above the loudness of you singing and the echoes of sermons from your word, I can hear your still, still, sweet voice of all the things I've heard. As I look at those exposed rafters, I sure do wish they could talk. All the stories they'd tell of lives changed here by you, souls changed by the power of your love, never to be the same again. Missionaries and pastors who first heard your call, go and tell while worshiping in this building. Lord, thank you for using this camp and the tabernacle on these grounds to speak to thousands of lives over the years. But Lord, your power isn't confined to any building, for your spirit works everywhere. You're ready to use people and buildings when we're simply open to your will. But I'm surely thankful you've chosen to work in such a mighty way at a place called Dry Creek Baptist Camp. Thank you for all the marvelous things you've done here in the past. But most of all, Lord, thank you that you will continue to work at your camp. As we plan and look to the future, lead us as we plan. Let everything we do be guided by your strong hand. And let my life be your tabernacle, a place where you're welcome to dwell, always remembering that without your presence, no building or person is complete. Amen. I wrote that in 2000 when I was a manager at Dry Creek Camp, and I want to tell you about the history of the camp, and especially what it's meant to me. The camp was organized in 1925 when a group of probably about 60 young people had a tent revival down on the creek, Bundix Creek, and they camped out and they stayed for a good while, and the Lord moved. There were many people saved at this meeting. They had such a good time, they said, let's come back next year and did it. So what happened? Each August, more and more youth would come to Dry Creek Camp for what they call the encampment. Many of them would sleep in tents, and people would drive in from all over on the gravel roads, and the camp just continued to grow till finally, they built a tabernacle. Now, this first tabernacle, this original tabernacle, I never saw it. I've seen pictures of it. It was round, had wooden posts on the side. It had a sawdust floor and some old pews, and it held probably about 500 people. And it was the original tabernacle at Dry Creek. For those of you know though the camp, it was about where Brad's Court is now. Well, in 1952, because of how crowded the camp was having these 10-day camps, and there'd be hundreds of people come. One of the first things I remember about the camp, I was a little boy, and my daddy held me up in his arms. And looking across that sea of people in the tabernacle, I remember all those funeral home fans blowing back and forth. I had that vision in it. Well, they built a new tabernacle, I remember, in 1952. It's a very unique building. It's built, it's a long rectangle. It's much longer than it is wide. And the podium, the speaker stand, with altar was up front, and then way back in the back you had pews. It was a long ways from the back to the front. We always laughed. The Holy Spirit had to really be speaking to somebody for them to leave the back row and get all the way to the front. But that tabernacle was a special place, if you've just heard me tell about in my tabernacle prayer. It's a big part of my life. I saw some amazing, amazing things in that tabernacle. I remember one time, it was the last night of a youth camp, and they were having a service, and the camp would be over, and there was a bus driver from Shreveport. He'd come down to pick up the youth from Brookwood Baptist Church. Has a little bus driver suit. He was in the back, walking back and forth. You tell he was impatient to get out of there. Well, he got to be impatient a long time because the Lord was working, the Spirit was moving, and the service didn't look like it was going to end. And I kind of watched out of the corner of my eye. I was a teenager then. And somebody went over, started talking to that man. I knew what they were talking about. They're talking about Jesus. And I saw that bus driver get down on his knees and pray back in the back of the tabernacle to receive Christ. And I thought it was kind of like the Ethiopian eunuch in the book of Acts, because that guy got up, drove back to Shreveport. I'd sure like to know about his life after that. There's a spot in their tabernacle. You know, the new tabernacle now, the stage has been moved from the end to the middle, where it's more, the seating is much better. And oh, I wish you could see the renovated tabernacle. Some of you only remember the old one that didn't have windows and was dusty and old hard pews. It's nothing like that now. It's comfortable and looks great. But in my heyday, that stage was down front. I remember doing youth camp. I'm pretty sure I was 16. And I was a Christian, a young Christian growing, and we had a wonderful service. And the Lord started speaking to me. It wasn't an emotional decision. And I went down front. I didn't even go down to talk to any pastor. I found me a little spot to the side of the stand. And I just got on my knees. And as I remember, here's what I prayed. Lord, I don't have any idea what you want me to do, where you want me to go, or when you want me to do it. But if you'll show me, I'll do my best to follow your will. And that was it. Nothing emotional about it. It's emotional, I'm telling it, but there was nothing emotional about that. But you know what? I got from there, and I'm in it. A lot of times when I go back to Dry Creek, I go to that spot. I can just about go back to the exact spot. I've shown my sons and my grandchildren that spot. And when I'm by myself and I go to the tabernacle, I'll go to that spot, get on my knees, and I'll say, Lord, I still mean it. I'll go where you want me to. Now, at that time, I thought the only thing you could be was a preacher or missionary. But God didn't call me to be either one of those. He called me to be a school teacher and a coach. And is one of the highest callings I ever had. I was able to influence lives. I just really enjoyed it. From there, I became principal. And then in 1992, at the end of 1992, the job came open as manager of the camp. It was not a good career move. It was a right move. And so I became manager of the camp and spent that time from 1993 to 2006 as a manager of the camp. And I just can't explain to you all the things that happened during that time. We just saw God at work. And I always laughed. I said, we just needed to get out of the way and let God work. And he did. And it was so neat. Here's another one of my favorite old stories. The man that led the camp, in Dry Creek Camp's history, has only been four managers. The first one was Uncle Dave Sargent, and he led the camp for 39 years. Now, during all his years, the camp wasn't open but 10 days. The rest of the year, it was closed. But during those 10 days is when they had the encampment. And Dave Sargent ruled and run that place for 39 years. I remember, and he was very old, and he had a golf cart he went around. It just looked like he was going around to find somebody to get in trouble. He was a pretty rough character, very much a disciplinarian. And a guy told me this story a few years ago. He said, I'd just come home from World War II, and my young wife met me for the encampment. And there I was in my military uniform. I sat down by her, and we were on the back row, and I put my arm around her on the pew. He said, all of a sudden, I felt a whack on my arm. And I turned around. He said, and I'd just been fighting the Germans. I was ready to fight. And there was Uncle Dave Sargent pointing his cane at him, letting him know that we did not have any PDA, public display of affection. And so when I became manager, my predecessor, Albert Hagen, had been there, and there was still, it was a time where they're still careful about rules, but over time, the camp grew, adjusted. Now, let me tell you how I got started working there. For some reason, I just was always drawn to the camp. We lived about 4 miles away, and I would ride my bicycle up there every day and just hang around. I was about 13, and I just couldn't get enough of the place. And one day, Albert Hagen, my mentor and predecessor, he said, you know what? You're going to hang around here. We're just going to give you a job. And so I got a job for $10 a week, picking up Coke bottles and dumping the trash. It was like heaven. Later on, I got to where I got to stay in the dorm with the other staffers. And from then on, I've been at Dry Creek Camp since then. I worked as a staffer all through my high school years. And then off and on, I've had every role you can have there leading up to manager. And it's just a real special place in my life. It's where all three of my sons met their wives at Dry Creek Camp. In fact, it's a place where many, many people found their spouses. I love to hear stories about that. We have many workers that work during the summer as staffers. Always when the staffers would first arrive in June, and there would be about 25 of them in a circle. And I'd say, now look around this circle. Some of you are looking at your future spouse. And they kind of look at me like I was crazy. Every summer, there's a lot of summer romances that didn't last, but every summer there'd be some couple that, from being at Dry Creek, they married when their lives. Another day sergeant's story. I know I'm hopping around, but I have so many good stories about Dry Creek Camp. During the Great Depression, the camp stayed alive. A lot of camps and churches and organizations closed down during the Depression. But the camp, and I think it was Dave Sargent's leadership, it stayed open. And a lady told me this story, that as a girl, she wanted to go to the encampment. She didn't have the money. So her daddy called Dave Sargent and said, listen, my daughter wants to go to camp. What can you do? And Dave Sargent said, just send her with a bushel of sweet corn, and they'll take care of it. And that's the attitude of Dry Creek. Dry Creek's always been a place about giving. They made fun of me about the generosity we had when I was there. They said, I'm the man that tried to give a camp away. But what I learned, and we all learn, is you can't outgive God. You just cannot outgive God. Well, I wish you could see the tabernacle at Dry Creek. You just need to come see Dry Creek Camp. It's a very special place. And here's what's neat. When I left in 2006, one of my proteges, Todd Burneman, took my place. He's been there ever since. And the camp is looking and running better than it ever has. And I firmly believe that Dry Creek Baptist Camp will be going, changing lives, winning people to the Lord till he comes back. Thanks for letting me tell you about one of my favorite places today. And I hope you'll join us again. Once again, if you want to learn all about Creek Bank stories, go to www.creekbank.net. And as always, we'll leave the screen door unlatched just for you.